Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 37 and a new mum. And when I was on the fence about becoming a parent, all I heard was, having a child will bring you nothing but joy. Now I've got a baby though, you think entertaining a baby's hard? Wait till you're entertaining a toddler. Now, despite deciding to baby, there's still loads more to find out from both camps. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I chat to baby wanters, baby rejecters, and everything in between to see why we decide to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I chat to Gemma, who suffered a partial molar pregnancy and was told she might never conceive naturally.
Some nurses started talking to me like I'd never had a baby because it was a tumour. Some nurses spoke to me like I had had a baby, and it was just a really strange limbo to be in.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Hello.
Mum guilt.
Oh God, yeah.
Does it ease?
Yeah, do you know what? I think it probably does a little bit.
Oh God, thank God for that. I thought you were going to tell me no then.
No, I think it does a bit, but I think there's always something new to have mum guilt about as they grow and change.
The reason I wanted to talk about it is because I feel like as a new mum, you experience mum guilt all the frickin' time. There's always, am I doing this enough? Am I doing that? Is that okay? There's constantly something. And the reason I wanted to talk about it is because it's so in my psyche at the minute that I almost don't notice it happening. But on our antenatal WhatsApp group, one of the girls had messaged the other day, and they're talking about because everyone's like either going through or coming out the other side of 4 month regression. And we're talking about in the morning, if the baby wakes up at like, I don't know, 5 a.m., they're not really due a feed. They're just a bit grizzly. Some of the girls had said, oh, I get the baby and I bring the baby into the bed with me and we co-sleep for the last part of the morning. And one of the other girls messaged and was like, oh, I'm so glad that you've said this because I was doing that but feeling really guilty about it and almost didn't want to admit it out loud to anyone. And it's like, oh my God, there's always something to feel guilty about. And actually, you're getting better sleep. The baby goes back to sleep. You get to have a nice snuggle safely, safe co-sleeping, everyone, chill out. I was like, how awful that constantly there's a thing of like, I feel guilty about this. I feel terrible about this thing.
Well, it's no blooming wonder, is it? Like, I follow a few like new celeb mums and the things they're having to defend themselves against, like before anyone's even said anything, because they're so afraid that that person's going to have a moan. It's just ridiculous. As long as you've got a good group of friends, you should be able to say anything and tell them anything.
So true. But it doesn't stop that internal guilt thing.
No, it doesn't. And actually, I felt more guilty. I think mine eased off and then I felt more guilty throughout pregnancy because I've been a bit out of it and not great health-wise. I've had quite a lot of guilt. I don't think it does stop, but just talk to your mates. Don't talk to any busybodies about this rubbish.
So true. And my question for you, Camilla, in response to what you've just said that you felt guilty about is, were you doing your best?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Then don't feel guilty.
I mean, some days maybe not. No, I do my best. But there are some days, like there's some days where I'm like, I feel like I'm a real super fun mum. Like we'll bake and we'll do crafts. And I'll get messages from other mums like, oh, you're so good. And I'm like, no, I was so good today. And actually, he really wasn't interested. He was interested for a minute. And I made the elephant out of the toilet roll holder. He really wasn't that keen. do you know what I mean? I feel like the need to say to them, no, please don't worry. I'm not that great.
Yeah. No, but equally, on those days that you go, I'm feeling a bit rough today and actually we need to have a cozy duvet day, that's still you doing your best on that day.
Yeah. God, yeah. As long as you're doing what you can, that's all that matters, isn't it?
Exactly. So I'm saying it out loud. Were you doing your best? Then that's okay. I'm saying that out loud because my internal head does not say that
to me. Let me say to you, Naomi.
Yes.
Are you doing your best?
Yes.
Excellent.
Mainly.
Hi, I'm Gemma. I wasn't sure about having a baby for a very long time. And I now have one and very early days, but another one on the way.
How exciting.
Yeah, only 7 weeks, so I don't want to go jinxing myself. But
oh, that's how are you feeling?
Knackered.
Mm.
Yeah, really, really tired. And it's so much harder with another one.
Yeah, I mean, I dread to think, but I'll never forget how knackered I was in that first trimester and being really amazed by that, because I had pretty much all my friends had all been pregnant and had multiple children and had all talked about being knackered through pregnancy. But I naively thought, oh, well, you're just tired when you get big and heavy. And actually, to be fair, I think I felt the most knackered in that early bit.
Yeah, I felt amazing in my second trimester. I was like, oh, I feel all bouncy and wonderful, but the first trimester was awful. I was just like, yeah. Oh, felt sick but wasn't being sick. I haven't had the sickness yet though this time. That's good.
Okay. That's good. Well, fingers crossed it stays that way. Now, obviously, this is your kind of parenting situation now. However, I'm going to quote one of the messages that you sent me, because your route to getting there was a complex one, and you ended a message you sent me with, "Suck on that, science."
Yeah, suck on it. For a very long time, I wasn't sure if I wanted a kid. I've got a stepson who I first met when he was 3.
Okay. How old is he now?
He is now 11.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just thought, my husband and I actually just both thought, that's enough. That's enough. I was really quite into my job. And then all of a sudden, and I don't even know what did it, but I don't know if it was that I was just realised that I was getting to a point where there's that imaginary cliff where if you go over the edge of the cliff, all of a sudden your fertility apparently goes down. I was sort of getting to 35, 36 and thinking, oh, well, if we don't try, then... And I just wanted a baby all of a sudden. And we tried and it went very wrong. I had something called a partial molar pregnancy, which is when an egg is fertilized by 2 sperm, which I thought was twins, but that's not twins. That's when one egg is fertilized by 1 sperm and it splits. But a partial molar pregnancy, it's 2 sperm into 1 egg, which means that the pregnancy fails, but it turns into a tumor.
I'd never heard about this before. And then I was introduced to you by a mutual friend who explained a bit about your situation and had somebody else come forward when I was trying to work out people that I would like to talk to, things I'd like to cover for this series. And a couple, and I was like, how have I never heard of this molar pregnancy thing before? No. Like I'd never come across the term or the situation.
No, a really, really amazing nurse that looked after us said that you don't talk about miscarriage. And miscarriage in the media is only presented as blood. So I'd never heard of a silent miscarriage, and that's what I'd had. So the baby had ceased to breathe, but I didn't know. So I went for 4 or 5 weeks carrying a dead baby. That's so dark. carrying my dead child around. So she said, the media doesn't talk about it, and pregnancy is not sexy. She said they do lots of research into brain studies and hearts, but pregnancy isn't sexy and we don't know what causes it. Therefore, we don't talk about it. Mm. We were first, silent miscarriage, and then they sent away our baby to be checked as to what went wrong. And I could have, the thing is, I wouldn't even known, but I wanted to know why it happened.
Mm. And so, what stage in pregnancy was that then?
So we found out at the 12-week scan, and they think the baby died around about 9 weeks.
Yeah.
And then they sent everything away. And a month later, we got a call to say, oh, we found out why your baby didn't make it. And it was strangely the best phone call to have, because I spent a month, and my husband spent a month, just thinking, well, is it because I did this? Or
yeah,
we went in to the early pregnancy unit, and that's when we heard for the first time about partial molar pregnancy. And it's so strange. Some nurses started talking to me like I'd never had a baby because it was a tumor. Some nurses spoke to me like I had had a baby, and it was just a really strange limbo to be in. And then from that diagnosis, I had to have fortnightly blood and urine samples to make sure that my HCG levels lowered.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, after, I can't remember the amount of months, but if they didn't lower, I'd have had to have had chemo.
I may.
But I was fine. I got signed off after 5 or 6 months. But now every pregnancy, they have to scan me early and make sure that... And also after I had my daughter, I had to have the placenta sent away. So no placenta encapsulation for me, it had to be sent away to make sure that it was fine. And so far, so good. But after the molar, we just weren't falling pregnant. And we got told that the likelihood was, as I was getting close to the cutoff point.
At the cliff.
The cliff at 36. I wouldn't fall without help. So they gave me Clomid and went, go on, off you go. Because they wouldn't give me IVF on the NHS either, because I was over 35 and I had a stepson.
Do you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one thing that really pisses me off about IVF on the NHS. And don't get me wrong, I think it's amazing that the NHS can help people to have babies in the way that they do. But I don't understand why it is not regulated. And it literally, depending on your postcode, depends on what you can and can't have. And I remember, so I'm in Bristol now, but I'm originally from Leicester. And I remember when me and my husband, when I did the first series of this podcast, when we were talking about what we were going to do, and I was getting older, if we needed to have IVF, I'm pretty sure that when I was in Leicester, I would have been able to have IVF up until 36, maybe even 37. But in Bristol, I would only have been able to have it until I was 35. So basically, if we moved to Bristol by the time I was 36, which we did, then I would not have been eligible. And that, to me, is bonkers.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Yeah. We were the same situation where we used to live. I could have had IVF three times with a stepson up to the age of 40.
Yeah.
In Southampton, where I am now, I could have had, if I had not had a stepson and I'd been 35, I'd have been allowed one course of IVF. Mm. But because I was 2 weeks over 35, no IVF, and even if I'd had a stepson, not allowed. And it was the stepson that really got me, because he's not my biological child. I couldn't get my head around that. So yeah, off they sent me with some Clomid and said, knock yourself out.
Yeah. And so what does Clomid do?
So Clomid makes your ovaries go nuts and like pop out loads of eggs. So you end up getting the symptoms of the menopause. And actually at the time I was given it, I just started a new job and I was like, I do not want to start this new job acting like I have the menopause. I just can't. Just going in having hot flushes and, you know, hormones being everywhere. So I thought, right, I'll just hold off. And I didn't do the Clomid. And then 1 month into my new job, I found out I was pregnant.
When you found out you were pregnant, though, was it mixed emotions because of what you'd been through before?
Yeah, so I was scared. Each scan went by, I started feeling calmer.
Mm.
The early days were a worry. And at the moment, I'm sort of having those little blips of, so we've got our 8-week scan coming up in 2 weeks' time.
Going back to when you suffered the miscarriage before, and then they found out about the partial molar pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Did you say that you requested to find out what had happened? So like, if you hadn't requested to find out, would you have never known that that's what it was?
Yeah, I would never have known. Because it was a silent miscarriage, I had to have medical intervention. So I either could have taken a tablet and gone home, or have a D&C. I wanted it sorted and I wanted to know when it was going to happen. So had the D&C, and you're lying there and they give you these reams of paperwork to have to read through and tick boxes. And then it was the very last box. It said, would you like to have the remains sent away for testing? And the nurse there said, well, it just means that, you'll find out if, so it's not always, but you'll be able to find out if there's a reason why it wasn't successful. And so I ticked the box just to be able to have that.
Yeah.
That clarity I thought would make me feel better. But it's scary, because if I hadn't ticked that box, who knows what would have happened.
How did it affect you in terms of the grieving process? Because going through a miscarriage is horrible. Does that either detract from it or distract from it, or does it prolong it?
It was a mind fuck. It was a massive, massive, just big fuckery of the mind.
Yeah.
We spent 3 months imagining this person, and then all of a sudden that person ceases to exist. And along with that, I found out I'd been carrying a corpse around for a month. And then a month later, you're told that person wasn't really a person, that person was a tumour. So you're mourning the loss of a child that, to some medics, was never a child. And then you're comprehending that you may or you may not need chemo. You go through denial that there was ever a child. So one day it made us feel better that we'd had a baby. The next day, no, it was never a baby.
Yeah.
Charing Cross were really good. They do have a specialist counsellor that spoke to me once a week, and that did help. But it was a really bizarre time. I felt like I was wading through treacle.
I found it really interesting that Gemma was allowed to have the fetus to be checked for a reason why what happened might have happened, because I didn't even have any idea that that was an option anywhere. So when I lost a baby before Chester, I wouldn't have even known that that was an option.
Yeah, and when you lost the baby before, it was almost exactly the same as what Gemma was saying, where you lost the baby earlier than your body was kind of telling you, oh, you're having a miscarriage. The baby had actually died before that. But when Gemma said to me that she'd been allowed to find out a reason, I was like, I've never known anyone go through a miscarriage and been... And again, maybe I just don't know that because I didn't ask the question.
It did make me ask myself the question, would I have wanted to know?
And would
or would
you?
That have just been a bit more torturous if there was something... I don't know. It's a real strange one. It is a real strange one.
But I also think... everyone, if that is the case, if there is a way that you can find out, surely everyone should be given the option to find out.
Definitely, because if it's something that's, you know, possibly going to happen again and you need some extra support for that, that might stop a lot of heartache and help people to have the right support from the get-go.
So that was quite the roller coaster. But then you did fall pregnant and it did go well, and then you had a baby.
Yeah.
So how was that bit?
Actually, having a baby is the best thing I have ever done in my life, despite everything that went wrong. And I don't even see it as wrong now. And I will tell Clem that she did have, we think that it was a little boy. I don't know why we think it was a little boy. We've just decided a little boy, and we call him Thumb because he grew no bigger than my thumb.
Yeah.
So Thumb was not a mistake. Thumb was a baby, no matter what medical science may disagree with. But no, Clem is the best thing that we have ever done. Birth-wise, it's the most extraordinary thing. Ah! And all you ever hear is the bad stuff about giving birth. Oh, well, she had to have 10 stitches and she had to have a vontuse. Oh, it was the size of a pineapple and all this. Oh! But just don't even listen to it. I did hypnobirthing. I got very much into the hypnobirthing camp, which again I got made fun of because apparently I was this weird new age hippie, and it's got nothing to do with that. It's just believing in your body, which was hard because I didn't believe in my body, because to a point it had played a trick on me. But again, suck on that medical science. My body proved medical science wrong, so I needed to trust it. And it was the most extraordinary 13 hours of my life. I'm quite a chatty person. I didn't speak for 13 hours. I don't know where I went, but I just went somewhere and it was amazing.
So amazing. Do it again. You're right. So many people do the horror stories and the scaremongering and all that stuff, and actually you don't often hear the amazing stories. And I think one of the reasons that you sometimes don't as well is because people sometimes don't want to talk about how amazing it was for them, because they know that it's not the same for everyone, and not everybody has that empowering and wonderful experience. But I'm so glad that you did.
It wasn't all good, because I did end up having to have a forceps delivery. It wasn't all water birth and scented candles. But I'm a panicker, so I was trying to push her out for how many hours? It was the night of the Strictly Come Dancing final with Kevin and Stacey. And my waters broke at 5:30 in the morning. This is spooky. My dad died 20 years ago this year. And I went to the toilet and I sat on the toilet and I looked up and my dad was leant against the door frame with a rolly in his hand. He always had a fag in his hand. And he nodded at me, smiled and then disappeared.
Gemma, I've literally just got goosebumps over my whole body.
It was bonkers. And I don't know if for that, from that moment onwards, for the next, because she was born at literally as Strictly Come Dancing started at 7 o'clock.
She danced her way out.
10 to 6. So I don't know if I was hallucinating from that moment, but I like to believe that there he was going, all right. And off he went. But yeah, so I spent 12 hours trying to push her out and she just kept going back up again.
Yeah.
And then they gave me the option.
That's another thing that nobody tells you, though. Nobody tells you that they come down and then they go back up again.
Yeah, they kept seeing her pop out and then off she went. And I was in the birth pool and I remember being in the birth pool and it was that rest and be thankful period and just nothing was happening and I was somewhere else. I don't know where I was, but I was somewhere else and Jim was talking to me and I wasn't talking back to him and I had all these playlists. I was like, I'm going to listen to this playlist. I didn't want to hear anything. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was eating raw orange jelly cubes just in this weird zoned out state. And then they said, right, well, you can try pushing again for another hour. And they kept taking me in and out of the birth pool. And the only thing I remember feeling was just cold. And at one point looked down and I was naked. And I thought, I really should be bothered about this. And I haven't trimmed my pubes, but I just don't care. And so they gave me the choice, keep pushing. But if you don't get her out after the next hour, you'll have to have a C-section or you can go downstairs now to theatre. Because I was just in the birthing unit upstairs. So I could go downstairs to theatre. And I could either have forceps or if that didn't work, then a C. And I was like, I'd prefer to have two choices.
Yeah.
Downstairs I went, that wasn't comfy. But again, I don't really know where I was. And then when I got down to theatre, it felt like I was in a spaceship. Did you feel like that? It's like being some kind of weird spaceship-y thing.
That's exactly what it felt like. Like the big massive light thing that's above your head is what I imagine it feels like to be beamed up into somebody's spaceship and what it looks like when you watch that kind of stereotypical sci-fi thing. The aliens come down to steal you away in their spaceship and they beam you up into that thing. That's what it looks like.
It was weird. And it wasn't dignified. They were flapping me about like a big beached whale. It wasn't a perfect birth, but it was an extraordinary experience.
Good.
And I came out of it thinking, my body can do that. Yeah,
I'm amazing.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely how you should feel. And so since then, obviously you say that she is the best thing that you have ever done. Why do you think that? Why do you love it so much?
Well, because I was told that she wouldn't happen, that's a bit of a smug feeling. Mm. She's just a little miracle. Each day something new happens.
It went so well, Gemma. You're a glutton for punishment. Are you doing it all again?
Yes. Yeah. Which was, again, it was a lengthy conversation. I'm an only child. Jim's one of three. And he always goes on about how great it is to have a sibling.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up thinking, well, that would be nice. That would be nice to have a younger brother or sister. But it was never to be. And we just thought, well, we'll give it a shot. And if it happens, if it doesn't, it doesn't. Because although Clem's got her stepbrother, there's a big age gap. Mm. And there's going to come a point, at the moment, that they'd get on great. But he's going to come a point with him that he's just not going to be very interested. Understandably, he'll be a teenager. He won't be interested in a toddler. She can't play Fortnite with him. So, and yeah, I only found out 3 weeks ago. So I'm probably being very silly even telling you.
Oh, no.
Hoping that everything, I'm being positive, hoping everything's going to be okay. And then I can be amazed by what this one shows me each day.
Yeah. So what made you decide, yes, you did want another one then?
I think it was Clemmy, really. Just seeing a child change each day and the different things that they do, whether it's a little smile or a ridiculously large poo or drawing on the windows. It doesn't, you know, some days you're very cross with them, but it's just amazing watching them grow.
Has it surprised you?
Yeah. My outlook on life. It's the only thing I've done in my life that I don't feel like a fraud. And yeah, I still, as a mum, I still have days every day, especially at the moment in lockdown, I have days where I'm just sort of just not done very well today. I've sat her in front of, at the moment, I tried to stop her watching Peppa Pig and she's somehow found out about Peppa Pig.
They always do, from what I've been told.
She was sat in front of that for 3 hours on and off on Saturday. And I just was like, oh, I've just not done very well today. And I think all mums do it. But even then, you know, I worked in radio and there were days that I just feel like a fraud or I was going to get found out that I wasn't very good. And when I was doing acting, it was like, oh, I'm not good enough at this and I'm not good enough at that. Whereas as a mum, although I have days where I'm, oh, I shouldn't have done that or I shouldn't have done that and I'm beating myself up, I can still reason with myself that I am enough. And it's the only thing I've done in my life that I can do that. And I think that's pretty extraordinary.
Gemma saying all that stuff about imposter syndrome and kind of feeling like everything you do, you're always like waiting to be found out. Oh, they're going to bust me here. They're going to go, oh yeah, she's not good enough. Made me feel really emotional because I never in a million years anticipated feeling like motherhood was the thing that was not going to make me feel like that. And yet it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Snap. I feel like there are a lot of negatives there.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And yeah, snap.
Not to say that I don't second guess myself, as we discussed earlier with the amount of mum guilt. Oh my God, I second guess myself on every single thing that I'm doing. But I feel so much more at home in my role as a mother than mm-hmm. I have ever felt in any, even in my kind of happiest and most secure jobs ever, which as a self-employed radio presenter is rare AF. But like, I am amazed at how much I feel like, wow, I'm doing this and I'm doing all right at it. Yeah. And if anyone came at me, I'd say to them, no, fuck off. I'm doing all right over here, thanks.
Yeah, no, I feel exactly the same. It's strange how it's like automatically you're their person. So fuck anyone who's going to try and say otherwise. I am their person. Do you know what I mean?
That is exactly it. I yes. am her person.
Yeah.
My journey and tell us about your own on social media. We are at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it really help us out, but it'll mean that nothing, not even the important arrival of a baby, will ever interrupt the Strictly Final.
Next time on To Baby or Not To Baby.
And they go, yeah, your waters are broken, but you need to dilate a bit more, so go back home. In that bit, I was suddenly like, oh, I haven't built the crib. So at 3 a.m, I was building that.